Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points. And it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, 8 days till the important midterm elections. I have a lot of thoughts on that. We have a lot of coverage we will have today of just how viciously vile the media and the left wing of this country, Democrats, have become in their desperation to try and get back some power. How it's all connected to the election. It's even beyond what I always predict, and that is every election, Republicans are racist, sexist, misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, that they want dirty air, water, and kill children and throw granny over the cliff. And now they encourage shootings, and they encourage people that send bombs out. It's almost universal in the media. It is so despicable, low, and disgusting. It takes your breath away in terms of the willingness of people to just go over an edge and cross lines that even I don't expect them to cross. But I guess it's all hands on deck when it comes to getting back power in the United States. You know, I'm reading today. I always pick up. I like the hard paper. You know, I like to hold a real newspaper in my hand every day, and I have the Wall Street Journal, usually, and the New York Post, New York Daily News, the tabloids for New York. It's sad, the Daily News, even though it's pretty radically left, no fan of mine, but I really wish the paper would be more financially viable because I just happen to like newspapers ever since I was delivering them as a kid. And the New York Post headline is, "Slain for their faith, the victims of the synagogue massacre." And I just took a lot of time this morning to really read through the lives of those that were slaughtered by this anti-Semitic, angry radical over the weekend. And then, of course, the predictable blame of Donald Trump when the guy happens to hate Donald Trump because he thinks Donald Trump is too pro-Israel, among other things. But, you know, you read about a loving couple in their 80s, wed by candlelight, at that synagogue, that very synagogue where the shooting took place 62 years ago, inseparable brothers who didn't let their intellectual disabilities stop them from, serving their congregation, 97-year-old widow, a new grandfather whose grandson was the love of his life. And this is our American family. And these people just walked into a synagogue, just among the congregants, killed at a shooting senselessly, and we've just seen too much of it. And also, we always get the predictable, gun issues. To me, we've had too many shootings at schools, at churches. In this particular case, this is the largest anti-Semitic shooting in history of the United States. And, you know, when the president says that, you know, having armed guards at school, or I've been advocating for a long time now, retired police, retired military, on the perimeter, in the property, in every hall of every school, and that's one way to protect our children. And I always ask a simple question, and it's not to me about a gun debate. If you find yourself in a building with an active shooter, would you prefer that there are trained professionals in that building with firearms as a first line of defense, especially knowing that most of these shootings are over in seconds? And even when you get the best response times from the greatest police departments, it's usually by the time they get there, they're just counting the casualties and trying to protect in an orderly fashion those who either are injured or weren't injured. So it's a thought. It's been used before, but that's not our big story of the day. The saddest thing I watched all weekend, I watched very closely, and even hearing my name brought up a number of times, and, you know, I'm just shaking my head because people obviously know nothing about me. They know nothing about, you know, they don't take the time to either bother to watch or listen to this program. If you've been listening to this program, you know, we have been decrying, going back to Kavanaugh, the angry mobs in Washington, confronting, spitting at senators, not letting them close doors there. We've been talking about how dangerous the left-wing mob mentality has gotten. We've talked about the incidences of Sarah Sanders and her family, her kids trying to get something to eat, Secretary Nielsen trying to get something to eat. You know, we've talked about Pam Bondi trying to go see a movie, Mitch McConnell walking to an airplane numerous times, and Mitch McConnell having his table slammed on, food ripped off his table just last weekend. Kevin McCarthy's office having a boulder sent through it. You know, and I've been saying everybody's got to stop. Now, we've been talking about the rhetoric. What have we heard? Hillary, you can't be civil. Kick him, Eric Holder. Been talking about Maxine Waters a lot. You know, if you see these cabinet members, you get a crowd. Well, what does she think's going to happen when the crowd is formed? And you follow them into restaurants and department stores and gas stations, and you tell them they're not wanted anywhere anymore. Well, how is that going to end well? Told the story when I met Senator, what's that guy's name from Connecticut again? Blumenthal, when I was coming out, this was in the middle of the Kavanaugh hearings. You know, I don't understand being rude to somebody just because you have a political disagreement. We had a very pleasant conversation. I invited him on my show. I don't know what came of it, but nothing, obviously. But I don't know if he's thinking about it. What is the point of being rude to people or getting in people's faces, as Cory Booker, Spartacus, says? Why is there this anger out there? Then we have, you know, all these bombs that are sent out. The first one went to George Soros, and I said that day, I said, this has got to stop. And George Soros is no fan of Sean Hannity's. Funds groups that wants me to be silenced and go away, but that's not what we do in this country. We protect people. You're allowed to have political views and spend your money the way you see fit in life. And even if it's being spent to silence me, you know what? I still believe in freedom. Or I don't want to see any politician hurt. And I have consistently over the years said that. When President Obama and people, you know, threatening him and people race, how does somebody get into the White House? Has that happened? We've got to protect our elected officials. We have one president at a time. That represents the United States, and that represents all of us. And at the end of the day, the power is in the ballot box. But, you know, you watch something like what happened this weekend, and you watch the Democratic Party, their lapdogs in the media, wasting no time, you know, trying to politicize this terrible shooting over the weekend, pin blame of the massacre on President Trump. Look, if the president says fake news is not serving the people of this country, you can chronicle it. You can watch it. They don't see it, which is sad. Their abuse and their bias and their abuse of a platform. But the reality is they lie and they have an agenda and it's constantly on display. That is not in any way, shape, manner, or form a call for violence. Social media, Pittsburgh shooter, this guy Rodney Bowers. By the way, he hated President Trump, which is barely getting any play. They're making you assume that he must have been a Trump supporter. Not only attacking people of the Jewish faith, but President Trump for his closeness. This shooter hated the fact that President Trump, and I think you could make an argument after so many presidents had promised to make Jerusalem the capital of Israel, that this president has aligned with Israel more than any other president in modern times. You know, Trump's surrounded by a slur for Jewish people. And then this killer lamenting, there's no MAGA as long as there's a, you know, bad word of, quote, infestation. But despite those facts, you have people, you know, pretty close to blaming the president and conservatives for the shooting. Joe Biden, widely expected to run for the presidency, seemed to do so when he tweeted to the president, "Words matter. Silence is complicity." What is he talking about? Paul Krugman, New York Times, suggesting that Trump was to blame, at least in part. Speaking sarcastically, Krugman tweeting a link to the story with the caption, but none of the white supremacist terrorism has anything to do with Trump. Oh, no. It's unbelievable how they now, you know, believe their own lies. Alan Dershowitz had a powerful column in the Daily Caller today, and he's been a passionate defender over the years, a staunch defender, and rightly so, of Israel and Jewish civil rights. Anyway, he drew a link this morning and pointed out something that very few are willing to say. And he said, a day after a man killed 11 people in a Pittsburgh synagogue, he criticized Presidents Obama and Clinton, as well as Keith Ellison. This is Alan Dershowitz. Then he went on Fox and Friends this morning. There can't be any tolerance for anti-Semitism. We have to have zero tolerance. President Obama meets with Farrakhan. They hid that picture for 8 years. Shame on him. Now we have the picture. President Clinton sits on the same platform with Farrakhan. Shame on him. Keith Ellison joins with Farrakhan. Farrakhan, one of the greatest purveyors of anti-Semitic hate. Just because he's black doesn't give him a pass on anti-Semitism. And any liberal who has any positive association with Farrakhan is part of the problem, not the solution. The Pittsburgh massacre comes just 2 weeks after Farrakhan, you know, called Jewish Americans termites. And that's mild compared to the anti-Semitism in the past, and is it racism as well? You know, this Israeli bashing Trump hater Linda Sarsour. After the massacre in Pittsburgh, we're hearing renewed calls to have a national conversation. Well, as long as we don't overlook some of the obvious suspects, you know, if you look at some of the history now of the Democratic Party, they don't seem to be the supporters of Israel they once were. And it's not limited just to Farrakhan. You know, we have Palestinian activist Linda Sarsour, well known that, you know, she was a lead organizer of the anti-Trump Women's March, where Madonna said she dreamed an awful lot about blowing up the White House. What's not so well known is the association that many prominent elected Democrats have with Sarsour. You know, in just the last year, she's been campaigning alongside some of the Democratic Party's most celebrated rising star, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. No wonder Cortez has adopted many of Sarsour's, well, radical positions. Then it was Kirsten Gillibrand herself, introduced at a rally by Sarsour. And last week, Ted Lieu reiterated his support for Linda Sarsour. And she's been campaigning for a Michigan House candidate, Rashida Tlaib, who vows to vote to slash aid to Israel when she gets in Congress. In August, Bernie Sanders was campaigning with her. You know, we're beginning to see something here is Democratic candidates increasingly, you know, they're being seen with the most radical types. If it was Trump, I can assure you there'd be a lot of people speaking out.
Attention all patriots, are you in the market for a new gun? Well, the USCCA is on a mission to get more guns into the hands of more responsibly armed Americans. So they want to give you 7 free chances to win the ultimate concealed carry package worth $1,500. That's a brand new gun, holster, magazines, and all the ammo you need to break it all in. Entering is easy, quick, and 100% free, but you're running out of time. Your chance to win vanishes Halloween at midnight. And remember, you'll get 7 free chances to win. Simply text CARRY to the number 87222 for the official rules and to instantly lock in your 7 free chances to win. It's that easy. Just get your phone out right now and text CARRY, that's C-A-R-R-Y, to the number 87222. This is your absolute last chance, and this is too easy and way too valuable to pass up. Text CARRY, C-A-R-R-Y, to 87222 right now. That's it. Just imagine getting $1,500 for doing something so easy. Get your 7 free chances for the ultimate concealed carry package right now. Text CARRY to the number 87222. Text CARRY to 87222.
So this guy is a fanatical racist, anti-Semite, hates Trump, and you know, it just is sad. And now we've lost 11 people, six still fighting for their lives. We can't forget them and in our thoughts and prayers. You know, and you watch some of these people out there pulling out all the stops all weekend long to tie Saturday's anti-Semitic massacre to Trump. There's two big facts getting in the way. While the Republican Party rejects anti-Semitism out of hand, it's the Democratic Party leaders. I'd never get in a room with Louis Farrakhan unless I was going to get in his grill and drill him about his anti-Semitism and his racism. The shooter, this guy Bowers, despised President Trump because he thought Trump was, quote, controlled by Jews. And not only that, part of Trump's family is Jewish. And so on and so forth. You know, apparently, as Ron Dermer rightfully said this weekend on Fox News, that, you know, these virulent anti-Semites can come from any side of the political spectrum. And if you look at the persecution that has taken place, and this was something that the president writes, the Jews have endured terrible persecution over the years. We've read it. We've studied it. They've gone through it all. And we still see so much of it. It is growing by leaps and bounds, sadly, all across Europe. It's getting scary. All these countries that seek Israel's destruction, radical Islamists, Iranian mullahs chanting death to Israel. Well, our president said we will seek their destruction, which is standing wholly behind in the right way Israel, as so many people have been, you know, victims of anti-Semitism. You know, Sarah Sanders pointing out, is there any tragedy the Washington Post won't exploit to attack President Trump? The evil act of anti-Semitism in Pittsburgh was committed by a coward who hated President Trump because the president is an unapologetic defender of the Jewish community in the state of Israel. We haven't had a president in modern history that has stood by our closest friends and allies, Israel, in the Middle East, ever. And what an act of courage it was, apparently, because other presidents had promised it, never did it, and making Jerusalem the rightful capital of Israel. Anyway, we're going to get to all of that. Fox News, similarly, under attack. I've got all the latest numbers on the election. I'm also going to tell you, if right now I would say the Republicans in 8 days, my prediction is today, I'll give you one every day if there's any updates, they pick up seats in the Senate. But I think we're down in the House by 5. I'll explain why. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. You know, and I watch the destroy Trump, hate Trump media, and, you know, it's amazing what they want to follow and what they don't want to follow. Is this the rabbi from the Tree of Life?
Yeah.
He's speaking. All right, let's put the rabbi up and listen in on.
You have to answer it for us. Within the Jewish tradition, there's a memorial prayer that's recited in memory of our deceased. Permit me to share with you the text in English first, and then I'll be chanting it in Hebrew, and at that time, I'll ask you to rise. The text roughly reads, O Lord of mercy and compassion, you who dwell in the heights with the holy and the pure, we beseech you to accept the souls of these 11 beautiful people who gave their lives to honor your glorious name. O Lord of mercy, bound them up in the wings of life eternal, for you are their portion. May they all rest in peace, as we all say, amen, and please rise.
That's Rabbi Myers. He's now speaking after the synagogue massacre. Amen to all that he just said there. You know, we've had a lot leading up to all of this, and go back to the Kavanaugh hearings. I didn't hear many people on the left decry the angry mobs that were going on in the halls of Congress. I got to the point where I said probably it's better if we cleared the halls of the public. Now, you would think in the people's house that the people would be allowed to go where their elected officials are, but it was obviously becoming unsafe for people. Senators being spit at. You saw the treatment of, you know, we've had in recent weeks, what do we have, Ricin sent, or what was supposed to be Ricin sent to Susan Collins' home. During the Kavanaugh hearings, the coat hanger sent to her office, etc. We've watched in the recent weeks, Ricin, or what they've said was Ricin being sent to the president and General Mattis and our FBI director.
Ray and our CIA director, Gina Haspel. We've watched in the last few weeks what? We've watched these mobs and people being run out of restaurants. You know, Sarah Sanders and her kids and family, Secretary Nielsen, Pam Bondi, Ted Cruz, Mitch McConnell, airports, and having his table slammed and his food thrown out the restaurant door. I've been telling everybody that the rhetoric is too hot and too heated and people need to calm down. But nobody on the Democratic side ever decided to stand up and say, this has got to stop. On this program, I said it when Obama was president. It's got to stop. We got to protect our elected officials. The day that they mailed this, the first device was sent to George Soros' house. First thing I said on the radio, I said, this can't happen in this country. I know he's not a fan of mine. And any of the people that were threatened by these bombs. But the rush to politicize this and turn this into, well, this is who conservatives are, is just one big lie. What you're watching unfold before your very eyes is, you know, the race to politicize tragedies. Thank God those 12 or 13 PVC bombs didn't go off and nobody lost their life. Thank God. But that wasn't Donald Trump's fault. And then you can, you know, look at this terrible tragedy and the shooting in the synagogue by this rabid anti-Semite, racist, and also a Trump hater, not that it should even be relevant. It's getting scary. We had real bullets used over the weekend, also to shoot up a Republican Party headquarters in Florida. You know, and that could have killed people. South Daytona police investigating after they said that someone shot out the window of the local county Republican headquarters. Police said a worker arrived Monday morning, saw the damage, called authorities. We have another threat of a man who's accused, the guy has been arrested for threatening to kill Florida Congressman Carlos Curbelo. That story came out this weekend. He's been threatened. There was a campaign rally with Lindsey Graham and Marsha Blackburn, and you had an angry leftist mob disrupting that, and a half a dozen angry liberal protesters, they had to be removed. You know, you think of the language, we can't be civil with Republicans and kick them and all the other comments that have been made, and then the utter silence when it happens to a conservative. Really shouldn't be something that's political. And calling somebody fake news, I mean, it is so disgusting over at CNN. Somebody sent me a transcript, I guess it was on Newsbusters, of Humpty Dumpty. Now, I understand that CNN doesn't like fake news, and they don't like being called fake news, but they are fake news. They're not a news organization anymore. They have gone full-time, destroy Trump every second of every minute, pretty much, of every day. That's what they do. So they have this panel, I guess, that they put together, and they're talking about what happened in the synagogue shooting, and we have to look closely at the poison being spread sometimes on television, sometimes out of the mouths of political leaders, and oftentimes on ugly, dark corners of social media. Yeah, it can be pretty ugly. Then it goes on. The first panelist is Bill Kristol, a never-Trumper. He attacks Fox News. I'm like, hello? What, we can't have conservatism? I support mainstream conservatism, Bill. I don't know what happened to you. I support originalists on the Supreme Court. I support lower taxes, less government burdensome regulation. I support energy independence. I support legal immigration. I support border security. I support peace through strength and a tough national security posture with a strong military to defend the values that we all believe in. And I support, you know, a free press, even to be wrong, even to criticize the media for being wrong. Then a Washington Post columnist comes out, some woman I've never heard of, Margaret Sullivan, you know, her praising her analysis and the Democratic threats, et cetera, et cetera. It reads like a list of Sean Hannity's pre-broadcast crib notes. And then is asked point blank if she blamed people on the right like Hannity for the violence.
Look, Margaret, you wrote about this week with regards to the bomb attacks, these suspicious packages. You said, you know, look at all his targets. This reads like a list of Sean Hannity's pre-broadcast crib notes. That was the way you put it in your Washington Post column. Again, are you blaming the Hannitys of the world?
Well, I think they have a share of sort of this, you know, revving up of hatred without regard for what its effect might be and without much regard for the truth. I mean, the way things are being pitched on Fox and in pro-Trump right-wing media is dangerous and it's destructive. So I think we need to call it what it is.
Now, Matt Lewis was on from the Daily Beast of all players, and he actually was the only one that made even a little sense. He said, the only thing I would add is tomorrow it could be Hannity who's targeted.
And I think our politicians have perverse incentives to gin up their base for elections. I think cable news has incentives to gin up anger and anxiety and passion for ratings. Same thing with websites, with clicks and tweets. I agree with everything that we've said so far today. The only thing I would add is tomorrow it could be Sean Hannity who is targeted or a Republican congressman who is targeted. And while I agree with the condemnation of what Fox has done in terms of ginning up this anger over the caravan, I think that this is a much more widespread problem.
Well, it is more widespread, and I have had far more instances than I'm willing to talk about of real credible threats towards me and my family, including the one that I did share last week with white powder purported to be anthrax sent to my office and one of my employees having to spend an entire day in isolation scared out of her mind. And it's been worse, but obviously these people are not listening to what I'm saying. Because I have been saying we've got to, you know, what do I advocate? I'm like, okay, I want these principles stood up for. I fight for the American forgotten men and women. I fight for lower taxes, less bureaucratic regulation, energy independence, Supreme Court nominees that believe in the Constitution. I believe we should secure our borders, legal immigration. These are things I've believed in my entire life and career. A strong military, security for the American people, a strong stand against evil in our time. It's not that complicated. I know what the Democratic agenda is. If they win, it's going to be, okay, we want to impeach Trump, endless investigations. They've stated they want their crumbs back. We know they support sanctuary cities, open borders, and the elimination of ICE. And they think Obamacare works, and it doesn't. You know, you had an MSNBC, you know, literally pressing the Israeli ambassador, Dermer, to blame Trump for the synagogue attack. That's how sick it's gotten. You know, ABC, Trump is at the center of all the political violence. No, he's not. But I guess it's an easy blame game. So now we've taken the predictable every 2-4 years Republicans are racist and sexist and misogynist and xenophobic, Islamophobic, homophobic, and they want dirty air and water, and they want children to die, and they want granny thrown over the cliff, and now it's that they are somehow inciting violence in the country. No, they're not. It's not true. It's never been true. And it's not any conservative I would ever support. And in the case of this guy that shot up the synagogue, he was a virulent anti-Semite who also hated Donald Trump. But that doesn't stop them from saying and literally advancing that narrative. You know, this is, you know, watching the Washington Post alone is unbelievable. Fox, this is their headlines. Fox News and the rest of the right-wing media can't escape responsibility. Well, I've been the biggest supporter of Israel that I know in the mainstream media, have been my entire career. Friends with Bibi Netanyahu going back decades. Been there during a war and been there at other times reporting. Showing people the tunnels that nobody else in the media would show them. Friends with Ehud Barak, formerly Shimon Peres. Let's name names, according to the Washington Post. Trump's hate and lies are inciting extremists. Well, this extremist in the synagogue hated Trump. Those are the Washington Post headlines that you got. Trump GOP defiant amid allegations that incendiary rhetoric. These are the same people on CNN fake news that couldn't identify a mob for who they are. These phony hypocrites. Trump blames. And you know something? When the media lies 24/7 and they get called out, that's too bad. That is not a call for violence. Unbelievable. The times that we're living in. Now, here is where we are. The Senate is interesting because there's two races you can add maybe to the let's watch column. And I would say that would be West Virginia, where Joe Manchin is down by two in the latest poll. And Menendez is barely hanging on to a lead in New Jersey by three. Now, do I think both of those races are going to be won by Republicans? Maybe West Virginia. New Jersey's hard, but possible. People in New Jersey clearly are fed up with Menendez. Then I think it's too close to call in either the gubernatorial race. I have no idea why Floridians are flirting with Gillum, who's got a radical agenda in Florida. Rick Scott's done a fantastic job as governor, and he'd be a perfect complement for the Republican majority in the Senate. I think Marsha Blackburn hangs on. We got Josh Hawley now in the lead in Missouri. We got Dean Heller holding on to his slot. Hopefully that's an important race in Nevada. I don't know why Kristen Sinema. Well, we've got new tape on Sinema tonight that will blow that case wide open. I don't see how somebody who supported Americans joining the Taliban can win in Arizona and calling her own state crazy in the meth lab of democracy and inviting radical lawyers for the blind shake. I don't know how she survives. Heidi Heitkamp, I don't think she's going to win in North Dakota. That'll be a pickup. As long as the people of Indiana don't vote for the Libertarian and split the ticket, the Republican there, Braun, should be able to win that race, and that would be a pickup for Republicans. I think Montana's a little bit in play, but I'd say favoring Tester at this moment, but Tester can be beaten there. And I think the biggest thing is I'm looking at Real Clear Politics and the battle for the House race. They have 205 likely Democrats and Republicans 200. And the rest, you have some 30 toss-up seats that are going to define or tip the balance of power. John James, by the way, is now only within six against Stabenow. He was once down by 20. He's a totally a great rising star in the Republican Party. And I think he'd be great, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think the House can flip. So there are three possible scenarios a week from this Wednesday, the day after. One is Republicans rock the world and shock the world again, and they hold on to the House, pick up Senate seats. That's the ideal for 8 days. Then there's a split decision. They hold on to the Senate, pick up seats, but it's Speaker-elect Pelosi. That's split decision. And the worst-case scenario is Speaker-elect Pelosi and Senate Majority-elect Chuck Schumer. All these important races we have on Hannity.com. Thank you, Linda, for reminding me. All right, a lot to get to today. Obviously, the horrible, brutal, evil shooting at the Pittsburgh synagogue. We'll have more on that. We'll have the latest update on the election and on the caravan and much, much more. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. Busy news day. Glad you are with us. 3 hours a day, all we ask. Best election coverage available.
Multiple gunshots are heard from the lobby, possibly 20 to 30 shots.
Where is that?
It's going to be at 5898 Wilkins Avenue, Tree of Life Synagogue, 3480, you copy?
480, I'm starting from the base.
Reports of an active shooter, one down in the Tree of Life Synagogue, Zone 4.
There are several people hiding.
Woodland by Chatham University, waiting for the first unit to arrive.
420. Officer has been injured. Channel 3 Lima on our stop bus traffic in the area.
Yeah, I already made that phone call. I stopped everything going in and out of there.
315, hold a perimeter. We're under fire. We're under fire. He's got an automatic weapon. He's firing out of the front of the synagogue.
Hold a perimeter, automatic weapon, gunshots fired out the front.
Katie Wilkins, I have an officer going shot in the hand.
587, 4
ASAP for medic radio.
possibly inside of the Tree of Life Synagogue. Wilkins as Shady.
315, every available unit in the city needs to get here now. All units hold a perimeter. We're taking on AK-47 fire from out the front of the synagogue.
2-8 to base, we need back two elderly hostages. We need a debrief as soon as possible if you have any intel.
That's received. I have a description.
Go ahead, send it.
Tall white male, short hair, light blue shirt, jeans. Again, that's tall white male, short hair, light blue shirt, jeans.
7-1, 7-1, contact, shots fired. Okay, 7-1, shots fired. Give me additional resources. Additional resources, third floor.
Resources to the third floor, 1054.
We got a guy barricaded actively shooting at SWAT operators.
Operator shot.
Guys, we got one operator shot at this time.
Third floor, contained in one room. One operator down.
Push shot fired. Multiple shots fired.
7671.
One goes your sit rep.
I've got about seven out here. Access to the third floor. Next volley gunfire we're taking.
Mike, what's your status up there, you all right?
7-6, I've got numbers. 2-3, we're good. We're good.
But as you know, earlier today, there was a horrific shooting targeting and killing Jewish Americans at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The shooter is in custody, and federal authorities have been dispatched to support state and local police and conduct a full and thorough federal investigation. This wicked act of mass murder is pure evil, hard to believe, and frankly, something that is unimaginable. Our nation and the world are shocked and stunned by the grief. This was an anti-Semitic act. You wouldn't think this would be possible in this day and age, but we just don't seem to learn from the past. Our minds cannot comprehend the cruel hate and the twisted malice that could cause a person to unleash such terrible violence during a baby naming ceremony. This was a baby naming ceremony at a sacred house of worship on the holy day of Sabbath.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Glad you're with us. 800-941 Sean, toll-free telephone number. 8 days till Election Day, 1 week from tomorrow. That was the president talking about the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter. We are getting to know a lot more about Robert Bowers and who he is. He was a virulent anti-Semite. He was a huge critic of Donald Trump in a lot of ways. And the president, you know, took heat for saying what, that we maybe, and we've talked about this after school shootings and after other church shootings, where the president said, well, maybe we need to have retired police and military. It's a sad state of affairs, but as a line of defense, but that doesn't take away from the horror and the vicious evil that took place here. You look at the victims. I mean, it is heartbreaking to see the faces of those slain for their faith, was the cover of the New York Post today. And as you read about the lives of these people, it is one heartbreaking story after another. Sadly, too, we've watched the media do what they always do, and that's rush to blame and pulling out all the stops to blame Donald Trump for the Pittsburgh massacre, when in fact the Prime Minister of Israel, Ron Dermer, the ambassador, have all said that the president's comments were welcomed and appreciated on every front. We'll get into all of this as we continue. Rose Tennant, the host of Quinn and Rose on Rose Unplugged in Pittsburgh, PA, a long friend of the program, and David Schoen, civil liberties attorney, criminal defense attorney. Thank you both for being here. You know how much I love my friends in Pittsburgh, Rose. I'm very, very sorry. Your thoughts and prayers go to everybody. The fact that it's been so viciously politicized within minutes makes me my stomach turn. And those trying to cast blame against the president and make this a campaign issue is just nauseating.
It is. Sean, and you are so loved in Pittsburgh as well. As soon as I heard the story, the news Saturday morning, I mean, my heart went out and I was almost afraid to hear the list of victims, their names, because this community is such a lovely place. It's a very popular Pittsburgh neighborhood. I go there to shop and to dine. And in fact, my son told me just about a month ago that's one of the neighborhoods he was considering moving to. So we love that community. It's a tight-knit community. They are very involved, though, in so many aspects of not just their community, but the surrounding communities. And as it turned out, you know, of course, I grew up with a girl whose cousin was the two brothers that perished on Saturday. But there were so many people that have done so many great things in this community, in the Pittsburgh area, and it's heartbreaking. It really is to see that this happened. But as soon as I thought those things, immediately I got sick thinking that this was going to become political. And it
did. You can count the seconds. Mm. There's an interesting side note to this, and I'll throw this to David, how Democratic candidates increasingly turn against Israel. And our mutual friend, Alan Dershowitz, you know, had a pretty powerful column that he put out linking the massacre to the Democratic Party's tolerance for anti-Semitism. Most recently, we saw Bill Clinton two seats down from Louis Farrakhan. I'd never, ever get in a room with a vicious, racist anti-Semite like Louis Farrakhan, or a picture that emerged with Farrakhan and Obama that was hidden from the public for 8 years while he was president, that existed, that they had a relationship. And if you look at some of the most pro-Israeli president I think we have had since the 48 partition plan, UN partition plan, is Donald Trump, more recently making Jerusalem the capital of Israel, which so many other presidents had promised and never had the courage to do.
Yeah. Any person who would suggest for a moment that Donald Trump has an anti-Semitic bone in his body is out of their mind. Look at his family, etc. But you're absolutely right in what you pointed out. If you believe that words matter, then it goes much further than just President Clinton sitting in a room with Mr. Farrakhan. There are pictures of President Clinton, President Obama, Cory Booker shaking hands and smiling with Farrakhan, members of Congress doing the same. Linda Sarsour, another hater, getting an honorary degree at City College, an honorary doctorate. It's an abomination. Mort Klein with the ZOA just wrote a press release about some of these kinds of things. And listen, this Linda Sarsour praises Rasmea O'Day, Palestinian terrorist who killed two American college students. She's been praised by Kirsten Gillibrand. She's been praised, unfortunately, by Stacey Abrams, who's running for Congress here in Georgia now. If words matter, then those things matter a great deal. It should be expected when you normalize Israel bashing and the hatred of Jews, it should be expected.
Well, the way that Alan Dershowitz put it, I thought was pretty powerful. He said there can't be any tolerance for anti-Semitism, and I agree. We have to have a zero tolerance policy. President Obama meets with Farrakhan, shame on him. President Clinton sits on a platform with Farrakhan, shame on him. Keith Ellison joins Farrakhan. It was one of the greatest purveyors of anti-Semitic hate. He's right. Just because he's black doesn't give him a pass for his anti-Semitism. And any liberal who has any positive association with Farrakhan is part of the problem, not the solution. And, you know, just last week, Farrakhan was making anti-Semitic statements. And it was only 2 months ago that Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson and Bill Clinton were all sitting next to each other with Farrakhan at Aretha Franklin's funeral. I would not go to any funeral that he was at. I'm sorry. You draw the line.
And yeah. Sean, if I may here, too, and there's something I'd like your listeners to know, because I noticed a couple of headlines today. On Sunday, there was a letter that was published and written by 11 members of a group called Bend the Arc, and they have a Pittsburgh affiliate right here, and they send a letter to the president just blaming him. They said that you yourself called the murderer evil, but yesterday's violence is a direct culmination of your influence, and they said the past 3 years, your words and your policies have embodied this and emboldened this. But you know what, Sean, what's interesting is I had so many messages and phone calls from my listeners today. They pretty much agree, first of all, that Bend the Arc, just so your listeners know, is not representative of the Pittsburgh Jewish community. They do not speak for them. That is what many of my listeners said. These people they're an obscure left-wing group. Very progressive Jews, and they don't speak for the Jewish community here in Pittsburgh, I've been told by many this morning.
You know, for even David, go ahead.
Very important. Very important point. By the way, I wish they were obscure. Peter Beinart is a member of that group. That's an Israel basher and hater from start to finish. Reportedly, George Soros' grandson is a member of the group. They purport to speak to this for this wonderful Pittsburgh community. I've been to the Tree of Life Shul. I was a guest of the rabbi there for a bat mitzvah. It's a wonderful place. They're not haters. They're not people who want to politicize anything. And the president, by the way, can't win for losing. The guy who sent those pipe bombs around, people claim he was a follower of President Trump. This guy, the shooter, the killer in Pittsburgh, hates President Trump. He called him a globalist. There's no bigger insult in that warped world.
Conservatives, by and large, mainstream conservatives, David, are the biggest supporters of Israel in this country. I've been friends with Prime Minister Netanyahu for 25 years, friends with Ehud Barak and Shimon Peres and others.
You have you've broadcast from Israel. You've been a great friend of Israel, but you're 100% right. And unfortunately, look, there have been articles lately. There's an entire stream of the Democratic Party now that is, frankly, Israel haters. And let's not give a pass to this. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, these new people on the scene, the Palestinians have been massacred. It's just not true. They're peddling lies about Israel, and that's very, very dangerous if you believe words matter.
Well, words matter. This was the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. The president also saying we will seek their destruction, which I agree with. All right, as we continue with Rose Tennant and David Schoen, you look at article after article in the Washington Post, Rose Tennant, you know, saying that they're tying the president to the synagogue mass murder.
And that's insane. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Sean.
No, it is insane. It is them desperate trying to help their Democratic allies win elections.
I love what the rabbi said. Rabbi Myers said that, you know, he's a citizen of this country, and if the president wants to come here, please come. He was not objecting at all to the president's visit, which I appreciate. And when we start focusing on this blame game, which is what we do, especially the left media, then we lose sight of what really happened. So, you know, what really happened is, as we discussed, an anti-Semite killed Jews. That was his goal. Those were the words that were true and spoken from him. He wanted to kill Jews. But we also had Pittsburgh police who are amazing. I love these guys. I know so many of them. They went rushing towards the gunfire while everyone else, of course, is rushing away. We had a Dr. Rabanowitz who went to care for a gunshot victim, and he became a victim himself. Rabbi Myers made every effort to save as many lives as he could, and he regretted that he couldn't save more. These are the real stories, and this is the truth. These were not acts of a nation divided. That's what the left wants us to believe. The media wants us to believe that we are a nation divided, but we're not. We're a nation or a community like this one, like any other. When we're faced with adversity, when we come face to face with a madman, we roll up our sleeves, we face that evil with courage and with sacrifice, and that is who we are as Americans. And when they play the blame game on the media, it just makes me sick because we miss what the true story is, what the truth is. And Rabbi Myers, I love what he said. He said, the bullet holes are too numerous to count, but we will rebuild because we're a tree of life. We've been here 154 years. You can cut off some branches, but the tree will continue to grow. We will be back. So that, Sean, is who we are. And Dave, as a nation, I know you agree, that's who we are as a nation. We are not divided.
Amen. Well, most of us are not, but the blame game is
right.
Nauseating.
There are some, yes. And it's
all right. Well, thank you both. Again, Rose, our thoughts and prayers to all our friends in Pittsburgh and to the community and the synagogue and the rabbi. Please send our love and regards and our prayers. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. 8 days till Election Day. How do we get out the vote? We're going to deal with that. All the other issues of the day, threats against Republicans that the media just outright ignores, and the mob mentality continues. We'll have a full chronicling of all of this as we continue. 8 days till Election Day, the best election coverage available on your radio dial. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, our number. You want to be a part of the program. Ralph Reed is back with us. He is the founder, the chairman of the Faith and Freedom Coalition and CEO of Century Strategies. And look, he was part of the Christian Coalition back in the day when they played such a powerful force in American politics. And in many ways, he has rebuilt the Christian Coalition in terms of getting out mailers and making contacts with voters all around the country, key races. Now, in the Senate, we're watching Florida. It's a dead heat. And that's both for Senate with Rick Scott, and that's for governor and Ron DeSantis is a couple of points behind, and that's not looking good. I'm also worried about Panhandle and people showing up in the Panhandle. He had a very tight race for governor in the great state of Georgia, although I think that's moving back towards Kemp and back towards the Republican. In Tennessee, it's, if you want to keep the Senate, it's a must-win seat in Tennessee with Marsha Blackburn against Phil Bredesen. And we have Bredesen's team on tape saying that he was lying about Kavanaugh and that he's going to govern as a liberal. And I think that really has taken people aback. Also, on tape, staffers for Bredesen calling the people of Tennessee ignorant. I don't think that's helpful. So I think Marsha holds, but people have got to get out to vote. We see Josh Hawley is doing very well, and he's up by a couple of percentage points in Missouri against that phony Claire McCaskill. And she's bragging about how, yeah, she really politically is just like Obama, but she too, like Bredesen, is hiding who she really is. Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota is down by double digits. She also was exposed by Project Veritas. We now have in Braun in Indiana, he's up by a couple of points against incumbent Joe Donnelly, a Democrat. The only factor there that I really see is there's a Libertarian that's drawing votes away from the Republican. So if you're in Indiana, don't vote Libertarian or else that's like a half a vote for Donnelly. We've got to hold the seat, Heller's seat in Nevada. Right now, he's currently up in the polls, but it's always tight in Nevada. And then Arizona, I have no idea why a poll came out this weekend showing Kristen Sinema, the Democrat, up on War Hero, 28-year veteran, six tours of duty, Iraq and Afghanistan, Martha McSally, especially with Sinema calling the people of Arizona crazy and saying Arizona's the meth lab of democracy and inviting the attorney for the blind sheikh to Arizona State University and saying right after 9/11, oh, it's perfectly fine if Americans want to join the enemy and join the Taliban. I don't have a problem with it. Anyway, he believes that he can help get out the vote. Ralph Reed is with us. That's the Senate. Do you agree with my assessment?
I do, Sean. We're currently contacting 26 million evangelical and pro-life and pro-family Catholic voters in 19 states. We've knocked on 1,907,228 doors through this weekend, Sean, not that we're counting. And as of this weekend, 5.8 million of the voters that we've contacted have already voted. We expect that number to exceed 10 million by Election Day. We think we're going to have the biggest turnout of Christian voters we've ever had in a midterm election.
Well, I hope so. I'm a little worried about the House. I look at Rasmussen's number. The president has not had a higher approval rating than he does now, which is perfect timing. The president literally has been going state by state and outdoing everything within his power to make people aware that this is really hard. Midterm election history is going against the tide here. If we are to hold the House and hold the Senate and pick up seats in the Senate, but I think we'll definitely pick up seats in the Senate. I'm worried about the House. Real Clear Politics average has the Democrats at 205, Republicans at 200. And, you know, basically you've got these 30 toss-up seats or thereabouts that are in play, and that's going to make all the difference.
Yeah, that's right. And Sean, our advice to people right now, certainly the thousands of volunteers that are out there knocking on doors and distributing voter education literature through our organization is ignore the polls, ignore the press, ignore the pundits, do your job. Get the literature
out. Well, ignore everybody but me. You know, I make a living for people not ignoring me. Thanks a lot.
You're accepted.
Okay, but I think you're right, though, because the polls are so often so wrong. I mean, let's go back 2 years. Donald Trump lost every state, according to the exit polls, 5-15 on Election Day.
Well, that's exactly right. And I mean, look, when I was state party chairman in Georgia, when we elected the first Republican governor in that state in 134 years, the last published poll in a midterm election showed him trailing by 13. He won by 5. They were only off by 18 points. And particularly in a midterm election where turnout is everything, it's all a matter of who does a better job of getting their voters to the polls. And Sean, I talked to a friend of mine who's helping to run independent expenditures in every targeted Senate and House race in the country. He told me that in some of these House races, they're down to as few as 2,300 undecided voters in an entire congressional district. Everybody's got their uniforms on, everybody's blocking and tackling, and everybody's going to the polls. And the good news is, we've got the ability to identify 26 million voters as either evangelicals or pro-life Catholics. We have phone numbers on 45% of them. We've got emails on about half of them. We have the ability to get directly to them, and we know nightly whether they voted or not, and then we can follow up with more phones, more emails, more texts, and more door knocks.
Where do you see, because I'm looking at six races, believe it or not, in Southern California that matter for the House. There's races in New York, House races that could tip the balance of power, and New Jersey can tip the balance of power, and Minnesota has House races that can tip the balance of power. But then I say that, and then I'm thinking, well, there are 435 races going on in 8 days, and any one of them can tip the balance of power. And while you use the polls and it's somewhat helpful, it's much harder to decide and get a feel for how the House is going to go.
Look, right now, we really see the House is on the bubble. We think it's plus or minus 5 or 10 seats. And we think when you're dealing with probably right now 100 seats in play, and probably half of those are tied, again, it's all about turnout. And look, you remember the special election in Georgia 6 when they had Ossoff up, 2, 3, 4, 5, and he lost by 4. It's all a matter of who does the best job at the ground game. And the good news, Sean, is the power brokers and the media no longer get to control who wins or who loses. We've got the ability to communicate to voters directly, online, on their cell phone, at their doors, wherever they work, play, and live. And if we do our job and get our vote out, we're going to have the potential to have as shocking an election night to the dominant media as we had 2 years ago.
I mean, that's what I keep reminding people. You can shock the world again. We can go against history. Nobody thought Trump would win. I mean, the networks were literally, when I read the exit polls at 5:15. I was doing radio at the time. At that moment, reading the exit polls, Trump had lost Florida. He'd lost North Carolina. He lost Pennsylvania. He lost Ohio. He lost Michigan. He lost Wisconsin. He lost it all. He barely won a state, according to the exit polls. The same thing happened in 2004. The exit polls at 5:15 election day showed John Kerry was president. So you're right not to pay attention to the polls. But more importantly, how do you get all these people involved that they're really spending the time making phone calls, getting on, getting the vote out and sending out these emails and letters and texts? What are you doing?
I have to be honest with you, Sean. I got to give credit where the credit is due. First of all, to President Trump for providing the banner of the positions on the issues that have got these people so excited. And secondly, to the Democrats for, during the Kavanaugh nomination, trying to smear and destroy a good man and his family. And we saw a noticeable inflection point in this cycle when they tried to destroy Brett Kavanaugh. It's a reminder of why people turned out in 16. And we've got 39 field offices in 19 states. We have teams operating in every key state in the country. They're overseeing walking teams that are going neighborhood to neighborhood. We had a woman the other day that was verbally accosted. A guy got in his car and followed her all the way down the block, screaming obscenities at her. She sent me an email later and said, not only am I not deterred, she said, I'm now going to walk every neighborhood in my town and knock on every door. It's that kind of intensity, that kind of commitment to our country. You know, at times like this, Sean, when people wonder, is that kind of decency and character still alive in this country? The answer is a resounding yes, it is. It's in the heartland of the country. It's at the grassroots. It's alive and well.
Well, I think grassroots politics works. Grassroots works, and I think it works from the beginning. One of the things, though, I think Obama led the way, but Trump and the Republicans did some catch-up, and we saw the benefit of their work in 2016, and that is the use of social media. I don't think anybody has a more powerful platform on social media than President Trump.
I think that's right. I think, Barack Obama was the first social media internet president in the same way that FDR was the first radio president and the same way that John F. Kennedy was the first president to master television. But if Obama was the pioneer, I assure you, Trump has mastered it, not only in his use of social media platforms, but also the things that his campaign did in 2016 to catch up with what the Obama campaign did. And we, for example, Sean, when we took our Christian voter file and matched it up against social media platforms, 72% of the voters we're seeking to contact are on Twitter, Facebook, or another social media platform. And we're broadcasting out 32 million videos, get out the vote messages, and other targeted messages directly to those people. And again, I want to stress, the minute they vote, they get dropped out of the turnout universe. And all the videos we've been pushing to their social media account then begin to go elsewhere.
No, I agree. Look, anything's possible. I don't take things for granted. I was one of the few that really believed that Donald Trump could win. I saw something happening because I was out on the road. I also see it happening this time. Anecdotally, you know, I can see it in ratings every single night. It's, you know, Fox's audience is enthusiastic. And you can see CNN, fake news, and MS, that they're just desperate and they're like not doing well. They seem almost, the audience seems depressed. But there are three virtual outcomes here. One is we shock the world. Republicans pick up Senate seats, hold the House. That would be the best case scenario. Then there's the split decision where Republicans get seats in the Senate, but Pelosi becomes Speaker. And then there's a worst case scenario. You wake up, you know, 9 days from now and you find out it's Speaker-elect Pelosi and Senate Majority-elect Schumer. And it's really up to the people which decision, which outcome they want, because we'll get the government we deserve. You stay home, well, that's a half a vote for Pelosi and Schumer. If you don't vote for the Republican, you're basically voting for Pelosi and Schumer.
Yeah, and I really believe, Sean, that the intensity gap and the enthusiasm gap that once separated the two sides has closed significantly since the Kavanaugh nomination. You know, you see different polls with Democrats with a high enthusiasm, maybe 72% of them, Republicans maybe 68 to 70%. But anecdotally, I'm telling you, I'm seeing stuff out there that I saw in 2016. I was in Des Moines, Iowa last week at an event with the vice president. We have a very strong organization out there. We have over 150 people walking door to door just in Des Moines neighborhoods. And this one gentleman who was volunteering told me he was at the president's rally the previous Friday in Cedar Rapids. They filled an arena. There were over 2,000 people who couldn't get in. They stood in the driving rain for 2 hours and watched it on a jumbotron. They stayed there to show their support. You simply cannot quantify that with a poll or with an analysis. It's an intangible, it's out there, and it's real.
All right, quick break. We'll come back more with Ralph Reed, founder, chairman, Faith and Freedom Coalition. All right, we continue with Ralph Reed, founder, chairman of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And I think that the people, look, there are many factors. I think Kavanaugh is playing a part in this. I think the Democrats, none of them have spoken at all about the caravan. Their silence has been deafening. The only thing they'll say is, well, Republicans talking about it means that they're racist and xenophobic. It just means we believe in the rule of law and we're not going to wait the 4 weeks till, you know, 14,000 people make it here. So I think that's playing a part. I think all the incidents of the mob on the Democratic Party side, we had some real bullets used over the weekend shooting up a Republican headquarters in Florida. We saw the terrible shooting in the Pittsburgh synagogue this weekend. You have a Florida man arrested for threatening to kill a Republican congressman. You have an angry leftist mob disrupting Marsha Blackburn's campaign rally with Lindsey Graham. We've seen two Republicans punched in Minnesota. There's a lot of anger and a lot of violence out there on the left. You see Republicans being run out of restaurants. Pam Bondi run out of a movie theater. Secretary Nielsen, Sarah Sanders, Ted Cruz and his wife, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy's office hit with a boulder busting his office window. So there's a lot of left-wing violence out there, and it's a pretty dangerous time.
Yeah, and I think anytime you're dealing with this kind of pervasive darkness, the most important thing that you can do is light a candle. And I think what people have got to do is they've got to resist that hate with a love for their country, a love for their fellow man, and hope for a better future for all of our citizens. Stay positive, stay prayerful, and work hard. You know, when I was coming up, Sean, in the 80s, I had a friend of mine who was running for Congress. He had a sign in the campaign headquarters I never forgot. It said, work like it all depends on you and pray like it all depends on God. That's not a bad way to live then. It's not a bad way to live now.
All right. Really well said. Ralph Reed, he is with the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And by the way, if people want to get in touch and help you out, how do they do it?
It's FFCoalition.com, FFCoalition.com as in faith and freedom.
All right. Ralph Reed, thank you. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. We got our news roundup, information overload. Get to that and more straight ahead.
People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally. The
president's decision to end DACA was heartless and it was brainless.
When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration.
Hundreds of thousands of families will be ripped apart.
If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong.
Tens of thousands of American businesses will lose hardworking employees.
And the argument there, Mr. President, is Americans don't want to do the work. We just can't find American workers to do the work. Mr. President, that is a crock in many instances. It's just not true.
In my view, Trump's decision to end the DACA program for some 800,000 young people is the cruelest and most ugly presidential act in the modern history of this country. I cannot think of one single act which is uglier and more cruel.
We've got to do several things, and I am, you know, adamantly against illegal immigrants. People have to stop employing illegal immigrants. Come up to Westchester, go to Suffolk and Nassau County, stand in the street corners in Brooklyn or the Bronx. You're going to see loads of people waiting to get picked up to go do yard work and construction work and domestic work. You know, this is not a problem that the people who are coming into the country are solely responsible for. They wouldn't be coming if we didn't put them to work.
My proposal will keep families together, and it will include a path to citizenship.
The number of immigrants added to the labor force every year is of a magnitude not seen in this country for over a century. If this huge influx of mostly low-skill workers provides some benefits to the economy as a whole, it also threatens to depress further the wages of blue-collar Americans and puts strains on an already overburdened safety net.
Immigrants aren't the principal reason wages haven't gone up.
There are those in the immigrants' rights community who have argued passionately that we should simply provide those who are illegally with legal status, or at least ignore the laws on the books and put an end to deportation until we have better laws. But I believe such an indiscriminate approach would be both unwise and unfair. It would suggest to those thinking about coming here illegally that there will be no repercussions for such a decision, and this could lead to a surge in more illegal immigration. These are students, they're teachers, they're doctors, they're lawyers. They're Americans in every way, but on paper.
Those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law. We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants.
Real reform means establishing a responsible pathway to earned citizenship.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. It's amazing the criticism that has been out there for what should be good coverage of the president. The president's now sending up to 5,000 troops to the border, a significant display of solidarity for our sovereignty, our borders, the rule of law, as he should. We saw about a week ago when at the Guatemala and Mexican border that people got to the border, knocked down the fence, charged over the police, and walked right through Mexico. And we now have estimates as high as 14,000 people, maybe less, somewhere in around that area, that are trying to make it to the southern border of the United States. And the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security have made it perfectly clear. The vice president made it perfectly clear that that's not going to be allowed to happen, that we're a nation of laws to turn around, that to do it the right way, to do it the legal way. And in spite of that, the marchers keep coming, although the president of Mexico did make an offer for some of the migrants, if they wanted, would be given special consideration to work in southern Mexico, but not many takers, apparently, according to what I read this weekend. You know, a lot of people have been asking, well, okay, how did they get so organized? Who organized them? And who's financing all of this? There's been a lot of conspiracy theories that I've never believed. The only one that made any, and it's not a conspiracy, when the vice president said last week that he felt that some of the leadership in Honduras was responsible for promoting the caravan, and some countries from South America, Venezuela in particular, were helping to finance some of this. That's the only bit of information that I found that was somewhat viable as a potential truth. Anyway, Sam Faddis is with us. Sam Faddis, he's a senior partner and former CIA operative with 30 years of experience in conducting intelligence operations in the Middle East, South Asia, Europe, and he's worked against the most dangerous of terrorist organizations the planet has ever seen. He has extensive firsthand experience with their methodology and tactics. And welcome to the program, sir. Glad you're with us. Thanks for serving your country.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
So you wrote a column, and I haven't read the whole column yet, but what my read of it is you think that the vice president was probably right on the mark.
Without question, he's right on the mark. I mean, there's actually no great mystery here. I mean, the guys that organized this are folks from a party called Libre, which is a Honduran Marxist party. A number of years ago, supportive of the President Zelaya, who basically tried to overthrow the Constitution and make himself El Presidente for life. They are in bed with the Venezuelans, and they have laid out in front of God and everybody all over the Internet their role in organizing it, posting videos and pictures from the march. So again, no great mystery. This is the work of guys allied with Venezuela Marxists, and it is, in effect, a giant covert action campaign designed to make the American government look bad and our allies look bad.
Well, I mean, look, America doesn't have much of a choice, and this has to be obvious to people. And I'm listening and watching the comments, and some people sort of associating this with anti-immigrant sentiment or xenophobia or whatever the charge is. It's not true. All conservatives are saying we don't care where immigrants come from. The president talked about a border wall with a big door and that people should respect our laws, our constitutional republic, American sovereignty, and come in. And if you want to come in, we just need to check you out, make sure that you don't come here with radical ideas and that you have the ability to sustain yourself and don't need our help. And then we can let you in and you could become a part of our family to the extent that you want to go through the process and maybe become a citizen. I don't think that's too much to ask. That's called the legal way.
Yeah, without question. This doesn't have anything to do with ethnicity. It doesn't have anything to do with race. This is, we're a nation of immigrants. We're also a nation of laws. Come in according to legal immigration procedures, period. You don't simply get to walk across the border. I have always wondered, by the way, for those folks that effectively don't want to control the border, why is it that only people who can walk here should be allowed to get in, if that's the principle?
Well, what I'm afraid of is I don't want anybody to get hurt, because America, the president means what he says. And if people rush across our border, be it at a port of entry or along the border that is not fenced, and that our military is on the border, the military is going to be given the order to stop them. Now, we don't want anybody hurt. I'm assuming 99.8% of the people coming here are coming here because they come from impoverished countries and they want a better life for themselves and their families. That's my guess. But nobody can vouch for every single person in that caravan. And for the sake and safety of the American people, we can't let that number of people rush across the border, have no vetting of the people, and sadly, maybe amongst the 14,000, there's one or five people that come here with intentions to bring us harm.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Sean. We don't want anybody hurt. And also, it is undoubtedly true that most of these people are simply pawns being utilized by folks hostile to the U.S. government. And they have probably been lied to from the beginning and told that when they get to the border, they will be allowed to cross. And so they are being put in the middle of this and simply used effectively as human shields and cannon fodder on the behalf of folks hostile to the United States. That is a horrible tragedy, because these are mostly just average people being used.
Now, look, I will tell you that, you know what? I really feel sorry for people. I've taken the time, I think, more than any other person in media in this country, and I've been down to the border 13 times. And horseback, all-terrain vehicle, boats, helicopters, I've been there. I've seen gang members arrested. I've seen drug warehouses. I've seen tunnels built. I've been on a border spot, one place in particular. It did have a wall and fencing, and I could look across the fence. And on the other side in Mexico, I saw nothing but poverty. I saw what we would almost describe homes built surrounding what looked like what we would describe as a junkyard even. And then on the other side of the fence are, you know, $1 million, $500,000 homes in San Diego. And if I'm on that one side and all I see is poverty and shacks, I think I'd want to look across to the other side and I want to go over there. Because things look dramatically different and better over here. And I don't think Americans, you know, we're very open people. But we can't take in the world's population and we have to have the ability to control our borders. And what we're asking is that people do it the right way. And it really just keeps, you know, it's now a circular argument. It's just what we have to do for our own safety.
Yeah, without question. What you've just described is most of the world, all of sub-Saharan Africa, most of South Asia, most of Latin America. It is the argument here on behalf of people that won't control the border that we are supposed to allow 3 to 4 billion people to move here, because that is what you are actually talking about if you're going to carry this to its ultimate logical conclusion. And we obviously cannot do that. We have to maintain control of our border.
Yeah. All right. Well, really, really appreciate it. Sam, thank you. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. All right. As we head back to our busy telephones, 800-941-SEAN is our number. All right. Let's get to our busy telephones. Liam is in Raleigh in North Carolina. What's up, Liam? How are you? Glad you called. Liam is a special name around here. You want to know why?
Why is that, Sean?
Because Linda's baby boy, who's now, what, he's 3, he is named Liam.
Oh, and so, that's awesome.
So Linda sent us all a video of her taking a day off and playing hooky last week, and she went pumpkin picking with Liam, and Liam goes out there. Remember, 3-year-old kid, he picks up a pumpkin about his size, and he's really struggling to carry it, and then he drops it in the road, and the pumpkin rolls away. And then you can hear Linda saying to Liam, 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 aren't you going to get the pumpkin? You going to let it roll away? And he goes, yep.
That's not what he said. It's so much funnier. He goes, yep, bye-bye, pumpkin.
He said, bye-bye, pumpkin. And I'm laughing. And you keep trying to, you know, entice him. Liam, now get the pumpkin, Liam. Liam, 1, 2. Liam, if I get to 3, you're going to have to sit in the pumpkin.
That's what we do.
If I get to 3, you're going to have to sit in the pumpkin patch. I'm going to leave you here. Anyway, and I'm laughing my head off.
I'm down here in Raleigh, but I'm formerly from Ronkonkoma, out there on the island.
Yes, sir.
The reason why I'm calling, and I appreciate you taking my call, but the reason why I'm calling is I think you, Rush Limbaugh, and Glenn Beck are downplaying this red wave. I don't think it's a red wave. I think it's a red tsunami. The Democrats are getting fed up with the lies and the deception of, you know, of Hillary and all of them, and that's really getting sick of them trying to demean Trump. So I think they just want them silence, and they're going to just vote Republican.
Listen, Liam, I am a realist, and I try to look at things as I study these numbers more than you know. If the election were held today, I think we'd lose the House by about 5 seats.
Oh boy!
If the election were held with the Senate today, we would hold Tennessee, we'd pick up Missouri, we'd pick up Arizona, we'd barely hold Nevada. I think if people don't vote Libertarian in Indiana, we'll win Indiana and we'll win North Dakota. Florida, too close to call. Montana, too close to call. West Virginia leans Democrat, although the Secretary of State there is now up 2 in the latest poll. Menendez is a long shot to be beaten in New Jersey, but he can be beaten. That's where my head is at today. And I'm trying to warn people that this is real, that, you know, we have history running against us. So there's only going to be 1 of 3 results on the morning after the night before. And it's either going to be, wow, the Republicans picked up seats and hold the Senate. Republicans, wow, they held on to the House. And that's going to be the best case scenario. Or it's going to be a split decision. They pick up seats in the Senate but lose the House. Or it's going to be a disaster. And that's, you know, Speaker-elect Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority-elect Chuck Schumer. Now, to be very frank with you, I can see any one of those 3 scenarios unfolding, with the 3rd one the least likely. So, you know, I'd rather go for the gusto and win it all. One of the big problems for the Republicans is they've had 45 retirements. That's 45 unknowns on the ballot, And the Democrats, you know, they're getting all of this money poured into these House races because they've given up a lot on the Senate races. They're going all in to get the House. And to really try to get in people's minds and make them understand that for the Trump agenda to continue, we really do need both houses. Because Nancy Pelosi is Speaker and Maxine Waters is a committee chairwoman and Adam Schiff is a committee chairman and Gerald Nadler is a chairman. It's a disaster for us. 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number.
Marty Nothstein, he won Olympic gold in Sydney. Started a small business back home, farms his own land, and cut taxes in Lehigh County. Now Marty Nothstein is running for Congress to bring common sense conservatism to government and fight for our values. Lower taxes, secure borders, term limits. Marty Nothstein, a conservative champion for Congress.
I'm Marty Nothstein, and I approve this message.
All right, glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour. There are about 30 races now we have identified. Actually, if you look at Real Clear Politics, they have narrowed this down to five races that they believe will be the tipping point. It's actually 30 races, kind of like what we have, but they have it a five-seat race. They've got the Republicans locked in at 200 seats. They got the Democrats locked in at 205 seats, and the remaining seats are up for grabs. In other words, they're toss-ups. In other words, if we win these seats, then that means that Republicans will retain the House, control of the House of Representatives. Now, that would be the super win that you want to go for. I mean, the Senate is looking better, but don't take anything for granted. I think we'll have pickups. I think we'll hold Tennessee with Marsha Blackburn. I think we can beat Claire McCaskill, Heidi Heitkamp. I think Joe Donnelly can be beaten. He's down in the polls. I believe that Kristen Sinema could be beaten as well. How she was up three in the latest poll is beyond any imagination I have. A poll has a dead heat, exact even tie, 46 all. Nelson versus Rick Scott, who's been a phenomenal governor for the great state of Florida. Ron DeSantis is coming back. Interesting, John James in Michigan has cut the lead of Stabenow in half, and it's only a six-point race in Michigan where it was once 20, and so he's doing very well. A lot of eyes are paying attention to the latest poll in West Virginia where Manchin is down by two. In New Jersey, Menendez is only up by three and seen as very weak and could be the big surprise of the night. Both West Virginia and New Jersey, two states to watch for potential surprises. Not likely, but potential. One of the House races that are on our top 30 is Marty Nothstein, is a gold medalist, currently serves as the chairman of the Board of Commissioners for Lehigh County, Pennsylvania. You're running for Congress there in the Pennsylvania 7th District to fill Charlie Dent's empty seat and a big Trump supporter, but it's a tight race where you are. You're one of the 30 that will tip the balance of power. How's it going there?
And I'll say this, Sean. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. You know, out campaigning hard every single day, hitting every corner of this district. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of motivation out there right now. I think people are starting to pay attention. They understand what's at stake, and they want to defeat the Democrats on November 6th.
Well, look, the issues to me are simple. What we have is we know what the Democrats' agenda is, to impeach Trump, but don't say it. Open borders, sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, but don't say it. Keep Obamacare, but don't say that either. Just say we're for great health care for all and make it sound wonderful, just like, you know, keep your doctor, your plan, and pay less. That's their agenda, and they want their crumbs back. Beyond that, it's let's hide and not tell people what we really stand for, because when we do, we know we lose, which is why all these, we have now another Senate candidate we'll be exposing tonight. We've got Bredesen in Tennessee. We've got Claire McCaskill. We got Heidi Heitkamp. We'll unveil another senator tonight, all caught on tape, all three campaigns, saying that they're purposely running as moderates, but they plan to govern as liberals. And their offices are laughing. In the case of Tennessee, you got Bredesen's staff calling the people of Tennessee ignorant. So is your opponent out there saying what they're really going to run on, what they believe in?
Absolutely not. You know, she's running as somebody she's not. At the end of the day, the Democrats think everybody hates Trump like they do. You know, and to me, they're completely out of touch. They can't see past their angry views, Sean. And let's not forget, don't forget election night 2016 when the media had two scenarios out there. One of the best case if Hillary won and the worst case if Trump won. And yet Donald Trump still won. Now we have a president. The president has a record. Hillary's true colors have come out. Contrast that to 2008, where it was best case Obama, and then look what happened in 2010 to midterms. Think about that. The voters corrected their mistake. Obama lost 63 House seats. And what's there to correct now? What part of the Trump success story do the voters want to change? Give the crumbs back, increase the regulations, watch jobs go back overseas. See, now that's the difference. My opponent doesn't talk about that. They're hiding behind a bunch of smoke and mirrors and not running for who they really are. But I think the voters are a lot smarter than that right now, and we're going to support some people on November 6th.
I noticed that former New York City Mayor Bloomberg is, you know, putting tens of millions of dollars, apparently, into a lot of these House races. Are you seeing the effects of his money and others?
I'm not seeing Bloomberg's money in this race, but I'll tell you one thing. Pelosi's PAC has spent $1 million on hitting me right here in my home district. $1 million, San Francisco money being spent right here in the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania, attacking me.
By the way, I say this to everybody. I said there are 435 members running for Congress, and if you vote for any Democrat, make no mistake about it, you're voting for Pelosi. They're just not saying it.
They're not saying it, but that's the absolute truth.
What are the polls' latest numbers show in the district?
2 points back. Where the latest poll shows that we're two back, well within the margin of error, and we're gaining momentum. We've debated several times. I beat her in every debate. She will not agree to any additional debates. We caught her. Actually, listen to this. We caught her in the debates talking about supporting open borders. Then she'd correct herself and say, no, I support a strong southern border. Twice she said that in the last debate, which completely makes sense because during the primary, she was running on abolishing open borders. But now, as we get in the general election, they're trying to pivot, and we're going to expose her for what she really is.
Well, this is a really important race. Now, Marty Nostein is running for the 7th District of Pennsylvania. This is the Lehigh Valley District, Lehigh Valley County in Pennsylvania. It's a dead even race. It's all going to come down to turnout. Democrats are spending a fortune. Republicans, sadly, have not spent as much, and they should be meeting these guys dollar for dollar. But I hope people in the 7th District, I know we have a lot of listeners there, are paying attention and get out and vote. Early voting goes on in Pennsylvania, right? So people can vote soon?
Yes. And we're seeing it, talking to our election board. You know, this is a mini presidential election is what they've told me, with the amount of absentee ballot requests and what is being turned in. So people are really, really engaged. They're really engaged.
And are you getting any feedback as to, you know, what's coming back, Republican versus Democrat?
I haven't been getting any feedback, but I can just tell you the people who I've been meeting and the people who aren't going to be here to vote have been asking for absentee ballots, and they're making sure they're getting their votes in. I have a good sense that there's going to be a lot of people showing up at the polls, and there's going to be a lot of people supporting Trump's agenda. You know, we're in the middle of a great American comeback. The last 2 years have given a lot of people hope in this country. More jobs, lower taxes, safer communities. Or do they want to have Nancy Pelosi take charge and have more welfare, higher taxes, open borders, and sanctuary cities? The voters are smarter than that, Sean. They want jobs. They want freedom. They want liberty. They want opportunity. That's what we want. That's what we have, and we must continue it.
Well, we wish you the best, Marty. All the best, and I know you'll bring that great training as an athlete to the hard work you do for the 7th District of Pennsylvania and Lehigh County. We'll be following the race. Good luck a week from tomorrow, and I hope you're able to sneak this out.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
800-941. Listen, you got to understand, this is now how close it is. It's all coming down to getting out the vote. It's 1 point here, 2 points there. It makes all the difference. There are enough people in this audience that if everybody just made a commitment, wherever you live, we're on 600 stations now, and you made a decision that you're going to get out and you're going to vote, and you're not going to stay home, and you're going to put in the effort, and you're not going to give a half a vote to Pelosi or a half a vote to Schumer, it could be, you know, shock the world again kind of night. If half of you stay home, then it's, you know, maybe we split the baby in the sense that, you know, it's okay, we save the Senate and get extra seats there, but we lose the House. It'd be a lot easier and better for the country, if you want to continue progress, to win both houses. As of today, 8 days out, I can see any one of those scenarios unfolding, any one of them. All right, let's get to our busy telephones. Let's say hi to Catherine is in Palm Bay, Florida, next on the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, Sean, I can't tell you enough how much my husband and I just absolutely think you are the greatest. Not because of just what you inform us, but because of your courage. Number one, our hearts and prayers go out to the people in Pittsburgh. It is devastating. I can't believe Americans have forgotten the history and the genocide that went on during the Holocaust. I don't understand it. But with that said, our hearts and prayers are with them. I have a point to make about courage. And by the way, you are right up there with President Trump and his entire family and those that stand by him. I want the conservatives in this country to take part in some shared risk and stand up, not in a violent way, not in a vulgar way, but maintain your credibility by being civil and stand up to all these bullies and oppressions and the violence and the hatred that they're spewing and the lies they're telling about our dear president, comparing him to Hitler and Stalin, which are just atrocities I can't stand to listen to. But the problem is we've got a lot of very frightened people. I think of President Trump as the most famous whistleblower in the nation because he's taken the curtain back on all the corruption in Washington and then some. I'm a whistleblower myself, an unemployed nurse practitioner who had to call out a surgeon 5 years ago, and I'm still fighting it today. That's fine. But I just want to say if the conservatives had some shared risk and stood together and consolidated.
You got look, let me tell you where we are now. I mean, we're now at a point where there's a group of so-called conservatives, never Trumper conservatives. Again, they're just angry they've been so wrong. Ben Sasse is one of them. Bill Kristol is another one of them. Jennifer Rubin, another one of them. You know, if Trump cured cancer, they would be mad because, oh, it was Donald Trump that did it. You know, it doesn't matter that he's transformed the economy. All things that they say that they as conservatives would ever want in terms of tax cuts, deregulation, energy independence, peace through strength, trust but verify, securing America's borders, all of these things. They hate it all because Trump is doing that which they've advocated for, but they wanted somebody to do it in a way that said everything the way they wanted to say it. But the problem is the old establishment way of doing things gets nothing done. You know, I agree. He can be incendiary. He breaks things. He throws dishes and breaks them in Washington, and he exposes the swamp and he fights hard. But we're getting the results and the benefit of that hard fight. You know, they're the type of Republicans that basically want to just sit and cower in a corner and act like they can be friends with people that are saying publicly to kick you and that don't want to be civil, that are running you out of restaurants and screaming at the top of their lungs at you. So, it is what it is. The only thing I really want at this point, I want results. I want the forgotten men and women to be taken care of. I want as much prosperity as we could ever create for every American. And I want to take care of Americans first, and then we'll work on helping the rest of the world develop the same system and paradigm that we've built that has benefited our population. And then I want security in a world full of radical Islamists and people that want to wipe America off the map and chant death to America. I want to make sure that we have the meanest, toughest, baddest military and that we can handle any threat that the world throws at us. And we can do, if necessary, we can protect the world against evil when evil, you know, raises its ugly head, because it's happened before and it's going to happen again. History has proven. And in the meanwhile, it's, you know, basically, temper tantrum politics of never Trumpers. They're still mad they got it wrong. You know, we wouldn't have two Supreme Court justices that are conservative had they had their way. We wouldn't have had the tax cuts. We wouldn't have the regulations rolled back. We wouldn't have America on a path towards energy independence. We wouldn't have had, you know, all the record numbers of jobs we currently have, or the big GDP growth we have, or consumer confidence that we have. That's why in 8 days, when people go out and vote, this all matters. A major question people have to ask is, are you better off than you were 2 years ago in terms of the economy, peace, and prosperity drive elections? And if you want this prosperity, this growth to continue, if you want America to remain the leader on the world stage, if you're not afraid to have a president that is willing to be a tough negotiator on your behalf, be it trade or NATO or Kim Jong-un, we didn't give anything to Kim Jong-un, nothing. And look at what we've gotten back, a shot at peace and denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. You know, if you want a president that says he's going to respect our Constitution, the rule of law, our laws on borders and security and respect our sovereignty first and demand that people respect our sovereignty first, then you know where to vote this year. All right, so in the midst of all this chaos and whining and election season, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We will talk about the synagogue shooting that took place over the weekend. We'll update you on the election 8 days away. The president announcing 5,000 troops to the border. Sean Spicer match slap. Jason Chaffetz, Greg and Sarah, Ron DeSantis, and Rick Scott. 2 important races in Florida. That's all coming up tonight, 9 Eastern. Hannity, Fox News. Hope you'll join us when we come back tomorrow, 1 week from Election Day. The best election coverage available on your radio dial.